Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231. It's your last lecture, May 18th. So we're going to finish up reproductive system. A lot of you are done with lab already. There's only one lab section left that has to take a quiz and a practicum today. We'll do that sometime reasonably soon, right after lecture, like maybe around 12:10, something like that, but pretty close to 12 o'clock. Then you'll be done really soon. All right, so that just leaves, for most people, just the final exam, and the final exam is just a regular exam. But you do get an hour and 50 minutes to take it instead of a regular, hour and 30 minutes or whatever you usually have. But it's just going to be a regular exam, about 100 questions, just like before. And that's going to be on Monday, May 23rd. Is the 23rd Monday? I believe it is, right? Yeah, that's Monday. And from 10:30 till 12:30, or 12:20 probably, right? I'm not sure. Somewhere in there. All right, and so that will include everything from, I believe, blood vessels. So blood vessels, lymphatic system, respiratory, digestive, urinary, and reproductive systems. Okay? All right, so anybody have any questions over that final exam? No, you're doing pretty good with that. Okay, I'll try and grade the practicum soon. Maybe I won't get to it till the weekend, but I'll try and get your grades in there so you know exactly what you have to do on the final for a particular grade. All right, so last time we were talking about the female reproductive system, and we went over all of these structures, and I don't think I want to go over the structures once again, but I want to talk about some of the hormone profiles today, and something about mitosis and meiosis. And let's see, Sylvia, see me after class, please. I forgot something at home today, unfortunately. Okay, so let's start with something, a review from like the very first week of class. And that is, if we have a cell, here is a typical human cell. And inside that, here's the nucleus. What do we got inside the nucleus? What is the nucleus for? It's an organelle. Does it make ATP? No? It holds DNA. It holds our chromosomes, right? And chromosomes contain the information on how to put your body together, but it also contains information, since it tells you the structure of your body, how it's going to function, because there's that relationship between structure and function all the time. So the nucleus tells your body how to function. So how many chromosomes, it's not important in this class, but somebody might know, how many chromosomes do we have in a normal cell inside our body? Yeah, there's 46. And in particular, it's not just 46, there's a special arrangement of these 46 chromosomes. Does anybody know what the special arrangement is? I don't think I talked about this before when we're... Two sets of 23. Yeah, take 46, break them in half, and you actually have two sets. So here is one set over here, here's another set over here, and this set has a number 1, a number 2, a number 3, all the way down to a number 23, and this set over here has got a number 1 and a number 2. And this number 2 and that number 2 are very similar. They have the same size and shape, they carry the same kinds of information, right? So if number 2 has information on what color your hair is going to be, then this one over here has color information about your hair as well. It might say different colors, but it will carry that same basic information. So you got a number 1, a number 2, a number 3, all the way down to, guess what? A number 23 over here. So that you have two sets of 23 chromosomes. And so the question is, why do you have two sets of chromosomes? Why not just one set? Why not just 46 chromosomes? And the answer is, because you have a mom and a dad, right? Because you have two parents. I mean, you might not have two parents right now, but at some point in time, even if you're a test tube baby, right, you still had two parents at some point in your life. So one set are what we call the maternal chromosomes, and the other set we call the papa chromosomes, right? Well, not really, but those are the paternal chromosomes, right? So you got maternal and paternal. So half of your chromosomes came from mom, half from dad. All right, so if we have this cell right here, and we were all just a single cell at one point in our lives, which is not very interesting because you can't come to lab and take a practicum if you're just a single cell, right? So you had to grow up and get big like this, right? And so what is this process called? when you go from one cell to many billions of cells? That's mitosis, yeah. So can you remember all the different stages of mitosis? I don't think we want to go over that, but you should know the stages like IPMAT, right? So you got prophase, metaphase, anaphase, telophase, and the chromosomes are doing certain kinds of things during that time, okay? And so mitosis is this process. This is one of the functions of mitosis, is to what? One of the function is that I drew right here is to? Is growth, yeah, so this here is growth. But there is another reason for mitosis, and what's that? Yeah, to replace old and damaged cells, right? So replacement. Because not all of the cells that we have today are what we had a couple months ago, right? So replace old and damaged cells. A good example of that would be like a red blood cell that only lives for 120 days. You lose millions every second. Those have to be replaced in the same number. All right, but in a little bit more specific example, if this cell is going to undergo mitosis, all right, what is the result of mitosis? So this is what we're going to call the parent cell, and it's going to produce two daughter cells, just two cells, right? So it's going to split into two daughter cells. So here's one, and here's another one. All right, here. So these are both daughter cells. And how many chromosomes does this daughter cell have? It's got 46. And what about this daughter cell over here? None? It's got 46 as well, right? So mitosis just reproduces the same cell over and over and over again, right? And then the next round of mitosis, you're going to end up with four cells, right? And then 16, then 32. So this is mitosis right here. Okay, and so don't forget, there's what, 46 chromosomes in this parent cell. So that is mitosis for growth and replacement, right? But that's not really reproduction, like when we think of making a new individual. What process is used to make a new individual? Well, we're going to start with a cell. Okay, somebody had a comment that I stepped on. Who's making a comment? Okay, yeah, we're going to talk about meiosis. So here's a cell. Your book calls this a stem cell. All right, but I think I'm going to call it a germ cell, because a stem cell just means, it could be called a stem cell, but it's an undifferentiated cell that can become various kinds of tissues in your body. But to me, a germ cell is something that's going to make a sex cell for us. All right, so it's a little bit different connotation. All right, and so here we have a germ cell, and it has the usual number of chromosomes that you have in your body, which are 46, and how many sets are there? There's two sets, and when we talk about these sets right here, we develop a little language to talk about that. Because there's two sets, sometimes we call that 2N, right? 2N stands for the number of sets. There's another way we talk about that, and that is in terms of ploidy. What's the ploidy of this cell over here? Since it has two sets, we call it diploid. All right, so diploid and 2N are exactly the same thing, right? So 2N is like an abbreviation. So what's the ploidy of this germ cell right here? It's diploid or 2N, right? So this is just like all the normal cells that you have in your body. And if it undergoes mitosis, it produces two daughter cells that are diploid as well, right? There's no nuclear reduction. All right, but for sexual reproduction, this cell right here, at least in the male, okay, so let's just talk about the male, for instance. All right, it's going to produce, all right, how about two cells? You might have taken a biology class, just like mitosis, but you know what? That's not really true. It's going to produce, actually, four cells when that happens. All right, so this is going to be the process of meiosis right here. And in the male, what do we call these sex cells? I'll put one here, here's another one here, here's another one here, and here's another one over here. What do we call these sex cells? These are sperm. Okay, so these are sperm in the male, not so in the female, but they do have a common name, a general name. These sex cells are what we call gametes. That's the general name. So the male gamete is a sperm, and a female gamete is called an egg or oocyte. All right, now, what can you tell me about the ploidy of these cells right here? Or how many chromosomes do they have? The hint is they only have 23 chromosomes. So they have just one set, so we could call them 1N. And in the word, instead of diploid, then we're going to call them haploid. They have half the number of chromosomes that a normal somatic cell has. So this is what we call a somatic cell that makes up your body. What does soma mean?
Body,
right? So a somatic cell makes up most cells in your body. These are gametes. These are a little bit different. These are what we call sex cells. And so these are haploid. So if we say haploid, what should I put in for the nucleus? You could put 23, right? Which is what? One set. It should be, if all goes well, it should be one complete set, a number 1, a number 2, a number 3, all the way down to a number 23 chromosome right here. Okay? And these chromosomes can come from one of two places, either the maternal set or the paternal set. And every sperm is going to have a different arrangement of chromosomes from the grandparents, right? Or from their parents. Well, actually, it's from their grandparents, right? So this number 1 might be from their mom, and this number 2 might be from their mom, and this number 3 could be from their dad. And what's the odds of this being from your dad as opposed to your mom? 50-50 chance. Every time it's just a flip of a coin, right? So all these sperm are different. So it introduces diversity. All right, so we got 23 chromosomes, or we could put what? A 1N right here. All right, so this process in the male is what we call spermatogenesis. And this happens after puberty, okay, for the entire life of the individual thereafter. All right, so I don't know how many sperm are produced, but for every emission or ejaculation, we think there's about 250 million. All right, 250 million. What is that number? Is that right? Oh, no, that's not right. It's like that, okay? All right, so there's a lot of sperm that are produced all the time. Through what kind of process? Mitosis, okay? And the number of chromosomes in a sperm is half the number compared to a typical somatic cell. Okay. All right, let's just kind of complete the thought before we get to the female reproductive system. But the bottom line, the gamete for females, so here is a female gamete, and notice what does a sperm have? It has an organelle for motility, which is a flagellum, right? Okay, the female gamete right here doesn't have any organelle for motility. There's no flagellum on it, there's no cilia, so it just floats around, and we talked about how important the ciliated lining of the fallopian tube was last time to direct where this oocyte goes down through the fallopian tube. All right, so it floats with the fluid, but that's okay because these guys over here will find them, right, because they're swimming around all over the place. But there is a similarity with this oocyte with sperm. It's a gamete, right? So what's the ploidy of this egg or oocyte? The ploidy is 1N, which means it is what? Haploid? All right, that's the ploidy. So it has one complete set of chromosomes, just like the sperm does over here. All right, so that when an egg and a sperm unite, all right, we get back to a cell that has what? How many sets of chromosomes? Two complete sets. So here is a new individual with a whole new mixture of chromosomes, right? And so now we call this cell, right, a 2N cell, or what kind of, in terms of ploidy, it is a? It's a diploid cell, 2N, comma, diploid. That's a diploid cell. And the name of this cell, we were all just a single cell at one time, is called a zygote. And we were fortunate enough so that this zygote found a happy place in a uterus someplace, sometime to implant, right, and to grow and undergo mitosis to get big, right, and so here we are today. So what is this process called when a sperm and oocyte join together? That's fertilization, right, so that's really easy. You knew that before taking a class. All right, so going from the zygote back to over here. So here is that, for instance, here's a zygote, and then getting to where we are now, what's that process called of going from a zygote to an adult? Then you need mitosis for growth, which is a little bit different process. Okay, the big difference about meiosis is that there are two rounds of cell division. right? So there's meiosis one and meiosis two, both have what, prophase, anaphase, metaphase, telophase, but there's two rounds so that there is a nuclear reduction taking place. All right, so that's really the only thing that I want you to know about mitosis, is that it's a little bit, I mean meiosis, is a little bit different than mitosis. You end up with four different cells instead of two, and it's a nuclear reduction, which makes sense because when we have these gametes coming together via fertilization, then you get back to the normal somatic number of chromosomes, right? So nobody misses out on any chromosomes. Good. That's pretty good. All right, so in the male, this process of making gametes is after puberty and goes their whole lifetime. It slows down as males get older, okay? But that's not necessarily true for the female. So let me see if I can get a nice slide pulled up over here. Okay. Yeah. Sperm? Yeah. I'm not sure I understand your question. From a germ cell? Every germ cell will produce four sperm.
But that's only for the male.
That's only for the male. Okay? The female, for every germ cell, will only make one gamete. And it's going to be a little bit too complicated for this class to find out when that happens, all right? And as a matter of fact, that whole process of meiosis even takes place after fertilization. But there is something I do want to say about this this cell right here, okay? And I think we need to maybe turn some more lights down, and maybe we can finish the semester while leaving some lights on. Let's see, that one I want to turn off. How's that? Can you live with that? Okay, your eyes will adjust to the darkness a little bit. All right, let's look at the slide over here on the right-hand side. So here is an ovary, right? So here you see an ovary right here, a nice fallopian tube. What's another name for a fallopian tube? Cell pinx, or you could say uterine tube, right? So there's, in anatomy, you know, there's always all kinds of different kinds of names. All right, so did anybody calculate how many sperm a male produces in their lifetime? Well, I don't know. You got to get your calculator out. 250 million for every ejaculation, right, times how many times you ejaculate in a year times how many years you're going to live would tell you the number, which is a really big number, okay? So I have no idea. So it depends on a lot of things. Okay, so billions, trillions, something like that. All right, so here we have an ovary. So now we're thinking about the female reproductive system. And these right here are what we call primary follicles. So these are some things that have already undergone some differentiation to become female sex cells or gametes. But they haven't really gone through meiosis yet. But these will become, will produce one oocyte or one egg for each one of these things right here. And this process of making primary follicles in the female is something that happens before birth. So the possible number of mature eggs that a female will produce in her lifetime is determined before they're even born. And the number, people don't really know exactly what the number is, but on the high side, it might be about 250 million primary oocytes. All right, so that's before a person is born. And then by the time they reach puberty, a number of these primary follicles degenerate to where you're left with, I think, again, people don't know exactly, but maybe 250,000, right, primary follicles right here. So contrast with, so in each one of these possibly could become an oocyte, and we think maybe 10% of that number might become an egg during the fertile years of a female life cycle. Okay, so let's say maybe 25,000 gametes a female will produce in their whole lifetime. So sometimes I get questions that seems a little unfair to females, right? Because males can produce how many gametes? Well, billions, trillions, who knows? You know, it depends on how many decimal places your calculator can go to. Compared to, right, something probably less than 100,000 gametes for a female. But I guess I have to point out, Who in here would like to have 100,000 children anyway, right? So 100,000 gametes is plenty, right? So our species is not in trouble and you're not in trouble, right? So that is plenty good. All right, so you're born with these primary follicles, and then during the monthly cycle after puberty, some of these primary follicles, maybe a handful of them, maybe five, will start to mature, okay, and become a secondary follicle. And then right at mid-cycle, and we can see that cells start to grow, but here is the follicle right here, and meiosis begins. Here is a mature follicle right at mid-cycle, and it has this little follicular fluid in the antrum, and it has an oocyte that's ready to be ovulated, right? And then right at mid-cycle, the follicle ovulates this egg cell, and now it's ready for fertilization. But meiosis hasn't even completed yet. There's still... And I don't want to get too much into the details, but this is a mature egg that can be fertilized, right? So even every cycle, you probably lose four or five of these primary follicles that just degenerate, can't compete with this one right here, right? But still, you have many more follicles than you would ever want to have children for anyway. All right, but just remember that this process is a fetal process that develops primary follicles, and then after puberty, the rest of this process happens, and we're going to take a look at some graphs as to what's happening. All right, so we have follicles developing in the first part of the ovarian cycle, and then at ovulation, we get to another part of the ovarian cycle, right? So the remnant of the follicle becomes this structure right here that we call the corpus luteum. All right, and luteum, oh, I should look up that word. I don't know what it means, but I bet it has something to do with color, like yellow, for instance. All right. So the follicle, even though the oocyte has left it, it doesn't degenerate and become an insignificant structure. It still is a very important endocrine gland. And I'm going to show you some graphs in a little bit. All right. So then it develops into a corpus luteum, and if implantation or pregnancy doesn't develop, then it degenerates inside the ovary, right, and becomes a corpus albicans, and I got to look this term up, albicans, but it probably means white, right? And then it is no longer an important endocrine structure, right? So on this slide, what should you know? What's the organ that produces gametes? It is the, in the female, it is the ovary right here, and then once a month, basically it's a 28-day cycle, there is one of these primary follicles that reaches maturity and becomes a mature follicle that ovulates a competent oocyte that can be fertilized. And then some people, every once in a while, you might have two of these, and then possibly you could have twins, right? And it could be from different ovaries, but usually it's only one ovary and one egg. Okay, so that's the important thing about this slide right here. Let me see what I have in this slide. So let's look and see how things are controlled. Oh, that's it right here. Let me pull up the next slide. Okay, so this is a slide that's very similar to one that is in your textbook. Okay, but it's no longer, at least in the pictures I get from the publisher anymore, it's not all included in one picture. And I think it's important to include a number of these graphs all lined up together on the same time axis that we have right here. All right, so here is a plot of a number of different things. We see two cycles taking place. The top box right up over here represents the ovarian cycle. So these are changes, and what causes changes within what organ in the body? The ovary, right? And the second diagram down over here is the menstrual cycle. So it's showing how certain hormones influence changes in what organ? The uterus, okay? And in particular, what layer of the uterus? You see it over here, the endometrium, okay? So therefore, we see two cycles taking place in the female. You have the ovarian cycle, which has to do with the production of gametes and follicles and the corpus luteum. And the other cycle is the menstrual cycle, which has to deal with changes of the endometrium during that cycle. Okay, and that's controlled by different hormones. And fortunately, we've talked about hormones already, so you're a little bit familiar with this. So we have some ovarian hormones. An ovarian hormone comes from, it says it in the name, where does an ovarian hormone come from? It comes from the ovary. Okay, and then we have gonadotropins in the top graph over here. Where do gonadotropins come from? And I see two of them. FSH, that stands for follicle stimulating hormone, and LH, that stands for luteinizing hormone. Where do these come from? You had to know that for a test already. The pituitary gland, right? And as a matter of fact, I'll just tell you for fun, it's the anterior pituitary. You'll have to know that sooner or later, maybe not for the anatomy test coming up, but anterior pituitary. And remember, the anterior pituitary is controlled by the hypothalamus, which is part of the brain. Okay, so let's look and see what's happening during this period of time. So let's look at now the time axis. How long did we say a typical cycle lasts for? 28 days. Okay, so it's a 28-day cycle right here. Okay, and it's the same cycle for the ovarian cycle and menstrual cycle. So these are justified in time exactly so that we know what's happening. All right, so on day one of the cycle, we only have primary follicles inside the ovary, and the anterior pituitary is going to be releasing some gonadotropins. And a gonadotropin means that it's a hormone that goes to a gonad and it causes changes within a gonad. And what are the two gonads? What are two possible gonads? Well, there could be male or female, right? We're concentrating on female right here. And so what is a gonad in the male? It's a testes. And in the female, it's an ovary. Okay? And what is the gamete that's produced by an ovary? That's an egg, and a gamete produced by a testes is a sperm. Okay, so that's just some more nomenclature. So the anterior pituitary releases high levels of follicle-stimulating hormone. So we see the level right here. Luteinizing hormone is at a lower level. All right, so what's the job of follicle-stimulating hormone from the pituitary? It stimulates a follicle-stimulating hormone stimulates a follicle to grow. All right, so here we have a primary follicle, and we can see that it is indeed growing. And that's what this little line here represents. FSH is really controlling the first part of the ovarian cycle. It's causing a number of follicles to grow and develop, right? But eventually only one is going to reach maturity. All right, and so this phase, this first phase of the ovarian cycle is what we call the follicular phase, because the follicles are growing. And this egg is maturing as well and becoming competent for fertilization during this period of time. All right, so that happens during the first part of the ovarian cycle. Then right at mid-cycle, which is day 14, right, there's another hormone that takes over, and that is called luteinizing hormone. There's a big spike in luteinizing hormone. There's also a little bit of a spike in FSH. But notice luteinizing hormone increases drastically, and that's the hormone that causes ovulation right on day 14. That's right at mid-cycle. All right, so I do want you to write down, what's the job of FSH? It stimulates a follicle to develop, right? That's on the first part of the ovarian cycle. What hormone causes ovulation? It is luteinizing hormone. Of course, all of these other hormones play a minor role, okay, but just I want you to think of the most important one. All right, so ovulation is caused by luteinizing hormone, and then both of these hormones start to go back down to their baseline levels. All right, so during the follicular phase, the follicle develops. Right at mid-cycle, ovulation happens. That separates an egg from a follicle. And then, what does the remnant of the follicle become inside the ovary? It becomes the corpus luteum. Okay, the corpus luteum. That's an important endocrine structure, which we're going to look at in just a little bit. All right, and then at day 28, if their implantation does not take place, then the corpus luteum degenerates. So a corpus luteum, sometimes we just call it a CL. A CL will just normally degenerate after about 14 days or 13 or 12 days if implantation does not take place. Okay? All right, so that is the ovarian cycle. So the job of the ovarian cycle is to produce one competent egg during this period of time. by developing a follicle, and then after ovulation, this corpus luteum sticks around for a little while. All right, let's look at the menstrual cycle. And here we see, okay, maybe even into day one from the previous cycle, a period of mild hemorrhage, and the layer of the endometrium is lost from the human body, right? It just flushed out the birth canal, right? And then the endometrium becomes very, very thin at the first part of the menstrual cycle. All right. Also during this time, what can you tell me about estrogen? Is it increasing or decreasing during this period of the menstrual cycle? Estrogen, this is the first part of the menstrual cycle. Estrogen is increasing, and I have to tell you where it's coming from. It's coming from a place in the ovary that is growing, that's getting bigger. Can you see anything that's getting bigger during this first phase of the ovarian cycle? A follicle is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? So this follicle is producing and secreting estrogen. And as this follicle gets bigger and matures, it secretes more and more estrogen. All right, so estrogen from the ovary makes its way to the uterus, and it causes the uterus to develop, to grow by mitosis. So instead of having one cell, what do you have? Two cells. And then after two cells, what do you have? Four. Right? Then 16, then 32. So whenever you have cells multiplying like that, we call that proliferation. Right? It's kind of an exponential process that's called proliferation. So the first phase of the menstrual cycle is the proliferative phase, when the endometrium, right, gets very large, it gets very thick, and blood vessels start to grow in it. All right, so what is the hormone that stimulates the endometrium during this proliferative phase? It is estrogen. And where is estrogen coming from? It's coming from the follicle as it's maturing. And this follicle is maturing because the anterior pituitary is telling it to via what kind of signal? Follicle stimulating hormone. So follicle stimulating hormone causes a follicle to develop, and then it secretes more estrogen, and then that causes the endometrium of the uterus to develop. Right? It gets thick, many more cells, and these blood vessels develop in it as well. All right, so this, in terms of the menstrual cycle, is what we call the proliferative phase. All right, now something kind of drastic happens. There's a positive feedback mechanism that develops between estrogen and LH. Most processes in the body are ruled by negative feedback mechanisms, which mean the following. For a negative feedback mechanism, for instance, if you start to exercise and your body temperature increases, then your body changes a little bit so that your body temperature doesn't continue to increase. It will do what? It will start to decrease, bring your temperature back to normal. That's a negative feedback mechanism, right? So when you start to heat up by exercise, what do? You start to sweat, and that sweat cools your body down. That brings your temperature back down. In a positive feedback mechanism, right, there's only a few that are normal and healthy, but this is one of them. But we can use that same example for body temperature. A positive feedback mechanism means that if you start exercising and your body temperature increases above normal, a positive feedback mechanism would do what to your body temperature? Make it hotter, which would then do what? If it's positive feedback, make it even hotter, which then, if it's positive feedback, makes your body even hotter, which you realize will lead to death pretty quickly when that happens, right? So positive feedback is rare, but in this part of the reproductive cycle, there is positive feedback between estrogen and LH. So when estrogen increases, what happens to LH? It increases. And when LH increases, what happens to estrogen? It increases as well, right? So they both go up, and then all of a sudden, something changes. What happens? This mature follicle explodes, right? And that breaks that positive feedback mechanism, okay? And these hormones then start to go back down. So positive feedback mechanisms usually lead to something fairly drastic, like ovulation or death, right, for instance, but not in this particular case. All right, so estrogen is important for the proliferative phase. Estrogen comes from these follicles. Okay, and so now this egg is floating around, hopefully through a fallopian tube on its way to the uterus and not in the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity. But this follicle doesn't degenerate completely, doesn't go away. It becomes what? The corpus luteum, right, inside the ovary. And now we have the luteal phase in the ovary. And during this time, there's a big switch in hormone that is being produced by the remnant of the follicle. Instead of estrogen, now the corpus luteum secretes a lot of progesterone. That's a second female sex hormone. It's a steroid, kind of similar to estrogen, right? It's secreted by the corpus luteum, and that causes the secretory phase within the endometrium. So the endometrium still grows. It maintains the endometrial lining. These invaginations are very, very deep, and they become glands. They secrete substances that enhance implantation. The vasculature matures, right? So progesterone makes the endometrium competent for implantation. You still need a little bit of estrogen. That won't happen without estrogen, but if you're going to pick one hormone, you would say that during the secretory phase of the menstrual cycle, progesterone is necessary to maintain the endometrial lining so it does not regress. Okay, so let me tell you something about this word progesterone for you to maybe see something about it. What can you tell me about gestation? What does gestation mean? Yeah, it's pregnancy. That's the term of pregnancy, right? When there is a developing fetus within the uterus. Okay, that's gestation. So here's a word that's called progesterone, and that's really a short form for progestational hormone. So this hormone is going to be at high levels during when? When somebody is pregnant, or whenever the endometrium has to be maintained. So progesterone maintains the endometrium for implantation or for gestation, because progesterone is progestational hormone. All right, so during the early parts of the secretory phase, progesterone makes the endometrium competent for implantation. Okay, but if implantation does not take place, the corpus luteum disappears. All right, and as it disappears, remember, the corpus luteum is producing what hormone? Progesterone. So as the corpus luteum starts to degenerate during the later phases of the menstrual cycle, then progesterone starts to decline. And when progesterone declines, guess what happens to the endometrium? It starts to decline as well, right? So it starts to degenerate, and then there's a little period of mild hemorrhage, and the lining of the endometrium then is sloughed out of the body, if all goes well. Some of these endometrial cells, and some people unfortunately do cause problems called endometriosis. If somebody's interested, we got time at the end of lecture to talk about that. I'll be happy to do that. All right, so this is a pretty important figure because it really tells you about the reproductive cycle of the female. Like, how long is it? It's 28 days long. Okay, there are gonadotropins that are involved in controlling the ovarian cycle, and then these follicles and the corpus luteum secrete hormones that control the uterus, namely what layer of the uterus? The endometrium, right? Okay, so other important thing that I want you to know is what hormone primarily causes a primary follicle to develop to maturity? That is follicle-stimulating hormone right here, and that's during the follicular phase of the ovarian cycle. All right, and then what hormone causes ovulation of an egg from a mature follicle? That is luteinizing hormone. Yeah, fantastic. Okay, and those are all released from the anterior pituitary, but that's controlled by your brain, your hypothalamus, remember? All right, and what hormone does a developing follicle release?
Estrogen.
Right, an ovarian hormone we call estrogen, and what's the effect of estrogen? It causes the growth of the endometrium, which is the inner lining, right? It's the deepest layer of the uterus, all right? And then right at mid-cycle, estrogen starts to decline because what happens to the follicle? Ovulation produces what? The follicle ruptures, and therefore you don't have a follicle anymore. What are you left with? A structure called the corpus luteum, and now the corpus luteum doesn't secrete so much estrogen. What does it start to secrete? Progesterone, right? So now it's telling the female body, or the endometrium in particular, that what is happening? pregnancy is happening, that it should be ready for implantation and support a pregnancy. Okay, but if implantation does not take place, the corpus luteum regresses, so it stops producing progesterone, and then what happens to the endometrium? It deteriorates, right? And then the cycle repeats itself over and over and over again. Okay, so you might be wondering, okay, what happens if there is implantation? Right, this I don't think is on your test, but I'll talk about it just because it will reinforce the importance of that corpus luteum. If implantation does take place, say like around day 21 or 23 right here, right, the placenta starts to develop, and the placenta starts to secrete a hormone that's going to talk to the corpus luteum. And the placenta tells the corpus luteum not to degenerate, to stay around, right? So instead of regressing, right, it just grows bigger and secretes more of what kind of hormone? Progesterone, which does what? Maintains the endometrium because it's a progestational hormone, and it maintains pregnancy. So progesterone, high levels of progesterone are necessary to maintain pregnancy. Okay. Anybody want to know the name of that hormone from the placenta? It's the one that you can measure with a little test that you can buy in a drugstore to see if you're pregnant. And it's called human chorionic gonadotropin. And that's what you can measure in urine in females that are pregnant, right? It's just a little signal that the placenta sends to the corpus luteum here to not degenerate. I'm here, I'm growing, but I need your help because I need the endometrium. That's what human chorionic gonadotropin is telling the corpus luteum. Okay, so take a look at those really interesting figures that you have in your book. Okay, so for the ovarian cycle, you got the follicular phase followed by the luteal phase. And what separates the follicular phase from the luteal phase of the ovarian cycle? There's something that separates follicular phase from luteal phase. And it's on this diagram, and I think I hear it over here. It is ovulation. Yes, exactly. Okay. Now in the menstrual cycle, okay, you have two primary phases. You have the proliferative phase when the endometrium is growing. That's due to estrogen secretion, and then the secretory phase because there are glands that secrete substances that aid in implantation. So we call this the secretory phase. At the end of the secretory phase, right, when the corpus luteum starts to regress and progesterone decreases, then you get this other little minor phase right here. It's short, it's maybe about 5 days, right, and that's menstruation. And of course, this is all variable. This is a textbook diagram, and it's different from person to person, right? And when I say minor menstrual phase is a minor phase, that might not be a very minor phase for you in particular, right? Might be more memorable than any of these other phases. But at least from a textbook period, a sense, right, you can see proliferative and secretory phases are longer than menstruation. Okay, so that's what I wanted to talk about today. Okay, does anybody have any questions over this diagram right here that talks about these four different hormones, where they're coming from, okay, and how many cycles have we talked about today on this particular figure? The two cycles, one is ovarian cycle, controlled by pituitary hormones, FSH and LH, and the other is the menstrual cycle, controlled by ovarian hormones, either from the follicle or corpus luteum, right? Ovarian hormones, estrogen and progesterone. All right, so here's a question for you. Think about the male. The male has a sex hormone, okay, and that's testosterone. Does a male have, the analog to that in the female is estrogen. Does a male have an analog hormone to progesterone? And why not? Because, that's right, because a male never goes through gestation, so there's no need for a male to have a progestational hormone. Okay? So that just kind of underscores, once again, what progesterone does. All right, now, in some people, we'll wrap this up real close, real soon. Let's see, I want to get to some figures right here. In some people, all right, let's look at the slide on the right. So here we have, what layer is this right here where I have the cursor? On the uterus. That's the perimetrium, and then we have the myometrium kind of in the middle, but that's the thickest layer. And then we have the endometrium. This is the layer that undergoes proliferation, right, during the menstrual cycle and is and partially sloughed off through the birth canal at the end of the secretory phase. Okay? And usually, okay, the cells, as they're being sloughed off, some of them are still alive, right? And they're expelled from the body, but every once in a while, some of these endometrial cells proceed retrograde up the fallopian tube and out the fallopian tube into the pelvic cavity or abdominal cavity, which they can bump into a blood supply of, say, mesenteries or a blood vessel that's superficial on the uterus or a fallopian tube, right? And since they have a blood supply, what can they do? They can survive because they have nutrients and oxygen. So these are endometrial cells that have been transplanted, right, through some kind of process we're not exactly sure about, to places in the abdominal cavity or pelvic cavity, right, and there they can live, and they're going to be stimulated by hormones. So what hormones are going to stimulate these endometrial cells? Progesterone and estrogen, right? So during the proliferative phase, you have high estrogen levels. What happens to these endometrial cells that are on the outside of the fallopian tube or mesenteries? What do? They start to grow, right? And cause inflammation of the abdominal cavity or pelvic cavity, organs associated with those two cavities. And this could be a really nasty inflammatory process in some women, okay? And then, okay, at the end of the cycle, then it kind of regresses again. But what happens on day one of the menstrual cycle to these endometrial cells? Because they're never sloughed out of the body, what do? Once again, they start to grow and cause inflammation. Okay, so that is what we call endometriosis. So it kind of reminds me of a cancerous process in that you have cells migrating from one organ to another part of the body, but fortunately those endometrial cells only stay in the abdominal and pelvic cavity. They can never migrate to bone or brain or liver, so it's not really truly a cancerous kind of process, but it is an aberrant process that does cause inflammation of the pelvic organs and abdominal organs. And I'm not a real big expert with endometriosis, but I think there is some relief because right at menopause, what happens? Well, it's a slow process. It's not just overnight, but a female will stop cycling, okay, so they'll stop cycling these big surges in progesterone and estrogen. And I would guess at that period of time, endometriosis then kind of disappears from the life of the individual, right, slowly over that period of time. But maybe surgical intervention might be required before that period if there's really severe inflammation. But again, surgery is only a partial resolution to that, because anytime you do surgery, what's one of the side effects? Is you're producing inflammation and scar tissue, which is basically what endometriosis is producing for the individual, right? So you got to talk to a good expert regarding that. All right, so that's the reproductive system. And so now you know why some people have these ovaries and all these cycles and a uterus, fallopian tubes, and other people just have a simple testes and penis. And that's why. For diversity, to produce diversity in a population. Okay, so that we don't all come down with the same pathology all at the same time. And that's why osteoporosis and what other disease in the male is kind of startling. Because we all have to deal with it if we're lucky enough to live long enough. Yeah, prostatic hypertrophy, and that could also, then a big part of that is prostate cancer. Okay, and I think once you get into a 70, 80 year old age group, 20% of all males will have prostate cancer. So if you know five guys, guess what? You know one person with prostate cancer. At least at that age group. We don't all make it to that age, but if they do. So it's a really serious problem. And literally almost 100% of guys will have hypertrophy of the prostate, and it's really hard to differentiate between just the benign process and the cancerous process. Okay, so that's it for this class. On the final, you will have some questions regarding those hormones. That's why I spent some time. So what hormones? Where do they come from? What are they controlling in the body, right? So it's either ovarian cycle or menstrual cycle. Ovarian cycle has to do with the ovary, menstrual cycle has to do with, in particular, the endometrium of the uterus. All right, so congratulations. Thanks for listening to lectures. That's it for class. Let me turn some lights on. All right, so don't forget your final on Monday. Yes, question. I'll try to get this lecture up pretty fast, maybe before the weekend, probably before I grade your practicums. Okay? So I have this lecture and Monday's lecture, I think maybe even tonight. Okay? Yeah, question, another question. Should I turn my, should I turn my microphones off? Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we have lots of time. Okay? So maybe I'll turn this microphone off, but maybe leave the other one on. I'll see you. All right, so I'll turn the class microphone off. Oh, and there's a sign-in sheet going around too, someplace.